Welcome to episode 394 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is a show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, it seems like it's been months since we've done this the old way.
You know,
like where you and I sit in different cities looking at each other in tiny little windows and talk to our computers.
Yes, it does feel like forever, but it finally is starting to feel like normal life again. We're we're past Christmas, we're past New Year's, we're past CES. It's finally just normal life. And now we're doing a normal version of the podcast.
Yeah, dude, I so brought the CES crud home with me.
Me too. It's inescapable. You can't get around it. So anyway, so we're back. I kind of went back and forth on whether it felt like there was a lot of news, but our show notes are long, so there's apparently plenty of stuff for us to talk about. We've also got a lot of listener feedback to get into tonight. These were all sent in to us at our email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. This first one is from James. It's kind of long, so I'm just going to summarize it, but I have to, at the very least, include his greeting to the message, which was, "Hello, good cop Josh and bad cop Richard."
I think that's fair.
Yeah, for the most part, I think that is pretty fair, actually. So basically, his message came down to wanting to discuss more about what we had said about our conversation with the guys from Silicon Dust. And he was particularly keen on what we were saying about unprotected cable and how the HD Home Run DVR, when it launches, will only support over-the-air channels and unprotected cable. We didn't really clarify what that means, and it's partly because I feel like we have clarified it so much, but you know, we get new listeners all the time, and this stuff is confusing. So first, let me clarify what unprotected cable means. When you get cable TV, all of it is encrypted, technically. That was the difference between clear QAM and then regular cable.
Right.
It's all encrypted, but some channels have DRM/copy protection. DRM is a form of copy protection. And those channels are what we mean by the protected channels. So some cable providers, or I should say pay TV providers, like Fios, which I believe is what you have, Richard, with Fios, they don't copy protect very much at all. They copy protect things like HBO and Showtime.
Not James, Showtime, believe it or not.
Seriously?
Seriously. Yeah, but Cinemax, because, you know, you have to protect that.
Well, sure. Absolutely. And in fact, James, the listener who wrote in here, he also is a Fios customer. And for him, the only things that are copy protected for him are Fox News and Fox Sports channels. Everything else is in the clear form. So I hope that kind of clears up what we mean by protected versus unprotected, because he even wondered, like, if they're putting all this DRM in place, how is that even legal? You know, isn't that what Cable Card was designed to do, was to make it so that we as consumers could watch whatever the heck it is that we pay for via our own third-party devices? Yes, it absolutely is. But Cable Card is really doing two things. The first thing it's doing is unencrypting it. The second thing is providing that key for the DRM for any DRM channels. So right now, when the HD Home Run DVR launches, it'll support anything that is not copy protected, anything that doesn't have that layer of DRM on it. Eventually that will come. It will come. I want to make that abundantly clear. It is coming down the road. We don't have a date on it, but it is coming eventually.
There's something else that I wanted to mention in here, because this confuses me. And he talks about how the protected content should be the same in Media Center as it is in HD Home Run DVR. And in theory, it is. But the issue is that Silicon Dust doesn't yet have all of the inner workings to make the DRM'd content viewable yet.
Correct. I would actually be a little bit more nuanced and to say recordable, because the previous version of the HD Home Run View Android app, that was the one that had the green background. If you still have that, that actually supports playback of copy protected channels. It's just right. That the DVR stuff doesn't yet.
Right. And that really has to do, as I understand it, with the way that the hardware and operating system handle the DRM content. That's kind of given, that's kind of built in to Android, whereas on Windows, they're having to build it more or less.
Yeah, I think that pretty well clears it up. I mean, the short answer is it just isn't all done yet. And once it's all done, it'll be available. But they don't want to release it in chunks or make it so that it only works here but not there. They want to get it all done at once and make sure that they're absolutely doing it correctly in line with all of the guidelines and restrictions that the governments and all that stuff put into place. So it is coming, and it will work on everything, and it will work the same way, essentially, that Windows Media Center worked, in that with Windows Media Center and a cable card tuner, you could watch this, you could watch everything. It will work that same way once they're done. And just to make it clear, because he brought this up too in his message, we have this stuff. You and I both have HD Home Run Primes, Richard, and I have access to the HD Home Run DVR. I've been using it. I'm not just reporting based on other things that people have told me. We have been using this stuff. So just so that that's clear. All right. Why don't we move on to the next message from Henry?
All right. So Henry says, I was at CES too and recently finished your last podcast. You mentioned you didn't see the new augmented reality goggles, but those from Lenovo, Acer, 3Eyes, and Dell were all there. He's talking about Microsoft's AR goggles. He says they were priced between $200 and $300. So I guess I have to admit that I wasn't really looking for VR AR. And if anybody was on kind of the lookout for this kind of stuff, this probably fell into your lap. But on the floor, I don't recall seeing any. Did you?
Well, none of these guys were on. Well, I'm not sure about 3Eyes. I've never even heard of 3Eyes. But Lenovo, Acer, and Dell aren't on the main show floor. I know that Lenovo has their own space set up in the basement of the Venetian, but they were also at some of the other press events that we went to. I went by their booths at those press events. I didn't see any goggles there. So maybe they only had them at their place at the Venetian, which this is the first year that I didn't go to Lenovo's booth at the Venetian.
Me too.
And I think Acer and Dell also only had private showings of things. That's how they tend to work there. So no, I just unfortunately didn't see any of those. I wish I would have.
All right. Well, he goes on and he says, do you think 3D TV is dead? What do you suggest those that have 3D Blu-ray libraries do? Samsung stopped making them in 2016, and I think LG is the only one left that makes 3D TVs. You know, this is a really, really interesting point. When I was looking at getting my new LG TV, the version that I bought does not have 3D. The 65-inch version did offer it. I don't know why. I don't know why they differentiated between the two sizes for 3D capability. And I pondered, is it worth trying to figure out how to make a 65-inch TV fit into my space so that I could have 3D capability, plus the price? And all those things combined, balanced with, but you've never watched a 3D movie all the way through. In my situation, gave me an easy answer. But you're right. There are a lot of people who have 3D Blu-ray libraries. Now, there's a really good thing about buying a 3D Blu-ray film, and that's that it came with a non-3D version of that same film. So you kind of, I want to say future-proofed, but really you kind of defunct technology-proofed yourself by having that that standard Blu-ray disc, and obviously you can still use those. This also made me think, you know, Sony, God love them. So Sony, when they were trying to recover from rootkit madness and everything else that was plaguing them, bet big on 3D. And I remember their then Sir whatever his name was, CEO, coming in and saying, Sony is all in on 3D. And they were doing 3D everything on every device that they could possibly cram it into. Yeah, how'd that go? It just never really took off. I think consumers never saw any value, and therefore there wasn't enough demand for them. So it's not, it got to the point where it's like, oh yeah, and it does 3D. But
right.
Now it's not that. Now it's just, oh yeah, we don't bother doing 3D anymore because nobody was using it. Not nobody, obviously, but not enough people.
Right. So to answer his question, yes, 3D TV is dead. And
aww,
he said that he thought LG was the only one left making 3D TVs. I believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm like 90% sure that even LG stopped making them. I don't think they had a single TV that had 3D technology in it at CES this year.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I don't know about this year's models, but certainly the B6 that I have, or 6B or whatever it is, in the 65-inch model did have it last year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, interesting. And then finally he asks, do you know of any Windows interfaces that allow you to watch DRM'd TV shows?
Well, I assume he means
Media Center. Right.
Assuming that Henry is talking about DRM'd like over cable card, yeah, the only thing is Windows Media Center. That's it until the HD Home Run DVR stuff is ready. Then you will be able to watch it in Windows and Android and iOS and lots of other things. But until that, it's only Windows Media Center. So if you specifically mean Windows 10, no, there's nothing. There's nothing right now. Sorry.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the last message. This one is from Paul. He says, I have a specific question. What is the best way to play a Blu-ray that has been copied as an ISO file? I know Plex won't play it. I actually like the Blu-ray menus. I like having access to all the audio tracks, especially the descriptive track, which makes a movie far more enjoyable to my blind friend. That's a really great use case. So, Richard, I think you used to rip your files as ISOs because you also liked the menus. I don't actually have a lot of personal experience with this. And when he throws in that word best, that gets super subjective. The first way that I thought of that would work, I think, is VLC, but that's probably not best.
Yeah. And I mean, I get this because yes, I did this and I gave up. I mean, basically, I had to give up, and I gave up for a couple reasons. One was that no program that I used managed to solve the problem of letting me get from the movie picker right to the start of the movie. With DVDs, that was possible. With Blu-ray discs, nobody seemed to be able to do that right, so that I could just skip the menus and jump right from the movie selection into the movie. And then, coming out of it, then have all of the menus available and whatever I wanted to do to navigate around the full disc. And as much as I wanted to have all of that stuff, as often as I watched it, it just didn't seem to be worth it. And since all of the discs that I buy now, I also try to get digital copy. Most of the digital copies now come with extras.
Oh.
So I have the ability to watch those on the streaming platforms that support the digital copy. One final thing for his specific use case, which I think is a great one. If you're looking to get the audio descriptive track, you can rip that if you use something like MakeMKV and make that one of the available tracks that you can then select in Plex for playback. So it's not like you're forfeiting that necessarily just because you can't have the other stuff from the Blu-ray menus.
Right. Yeah, that's a really great point. Would things like CyberLink, Power DVD player, and all that stuff, like, that would work for a lot of older titles, right? Like, I've had older versions of Power DVD. I know that it gave you the ability to navigate menus and stuff. But those older versions, because Power DVD and ArcSoft Total Home Theater, they don't make new versions of those apps anymore. So the old versions probably wouldn't even support recently released Blu-rays, right?
Yeah, I have a funny feeling that they wouldn't. And probably more importantly, at least from my perspective, you can't even get those programs. Like, the installer that you have for those, if you still have them. Now, I don't know about Power DVD. I don't remember if they actually still have a version of their latest executable available in their support for download or updates if you had a license. But for Total Media Home Theater, if you don't still have it installed, you can't reinstall it, because what you reinstall is old and you can't get the update to bring it up to date. So it's really a problem. And I that's kind of why I gave up. I just figured, you know what? It's just, I'm tired of fighting with it. I'm tired of having to come up with patches around the things that do and don't work or are or aren't supported. And I gave in, and you know what? I'm happy with Plex. Yeah. And I totally understand your problem. I just don't know that in today's environment, it's still practically solvable.
And I was wrong. Power DVD is still around.
Oh, all right.
Power DVD 16 Ultra, still around.
And it still plays Blu-ray discs?
Yeah, sure does, including 3D Blu-rays.
All right. Well, you know what? We might have just solved two problems right there. Well, no, because you still have to have the TV for it.
Right. All right. So that does it for all of our feedback for this week. If you'd like to get on a future show, you can do that by shooting us a message to entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All right, Richard, let's get into some news. The first one, I actually did my due diligence, and by that I mean I actually remembered to tonight fire up my Xbox One and go into the store and see if there's any new apps. Because a lot of times there's new apps and I don't hear about them because they're not always reported on. And I found one.
Right.
And I found one that's actually really interesting.
Cool.
It's NPR One. NPR One, I think a lot of our users are probably familiar with it because it's a fantastic app if you like consuming NPR content. It's available. It's been available on Android, iOS, and Windows 10 for a while. It's a free app, allows you to listen to, you know, your local, essentially your local NPR station, plus, you know, their huge library of excellent podcast options. And the thing that makes NPR One interesting is that you make an account within it, and you essentially start liking and or skipping, you know, different news stories and stuff, and it starts to build a profile about the types of things that you want to hear about. And so it'll start playing those types of things for you automatically. And then, of course, because it's NPR, it's all really high quality stuff. Well, now they've brought this app over to the Xbox One. If you're a Windows 10 user and you're thinking, yeah, but the Windows 10 app, it doesn't really have all of the great new features. It doesn't have the Explore option that makes it easy for me to find new things. Well, the Windows the Xbox version does.
Cool.
Even though the Windows 10 version doesn't have it yet. So it's been somewhat optimized for that 10-foot experience, and it's really good. Like, I might actually start using this to consume even more NPR content in my life. And what's even nicer is that they really thought about this. It also supports background audio. So you can be listening to your NPR stuff while you're doing other things on your Xbox One. So maybe you're going to check out the latest games with gold, maybe managing your content library, all that stuff. You can be doing all of that while listening to NPR One. I really like this app.
Yeah, really smart.
So let's, Richard, move on to your favorite part, the gaming section.
Here we go.
Yep.
All right, I'm buckled in. I'm ready.
This is kind of a big story. Back in, I think it was October, Microsoft had their big Windows 10 Creators Update announcement, and they talked about some things that we could expect that would come down the pipe for the Xbox and Windows 10 with regards to gaming from the Creators Update. They talked about Beam streaming, better performance, some other tweaks that were coming, user creatable tournaments and all this stuff. And it was all just that's coming down the road. We'll let you know when it happens, but don't get too excited yet. Well, it's happening. Like I kind of expected it to happen by now, because on Friday they released a post saying, here's a bunch of stuff. It's coming in preview next week. That would be this week that we're recording this. I don't have it yet, so it's probably out by the time you're listening to this, though. And there is some big new stuff coming in this. First off, Beam. They are integrating Beam. Beam is a Twitch competitor that they bought last summer. With the two big features that are cool about Beam is like sub-second delay. Anyone who's ever watched a Twitch stream is probably familiar with the fact that there's like a good 30-second delay. So if you're trying to chat with the person who's streaming, that's kind of difficult to do with that big of a delay. And then the other thing is that they have the ability for viewers of streams to actually interact with the game in certain ways. Now, only certain games are supported, but it is kind of neat. So that is going to be built right into the Xbox. They say that it's basically going to be one button press to make yourself start streaming. So that's cool. It's also coming to Windows 10. It'll be integrated into that game bar, which I think there's a shortcut key. I think it's Windows key G brings up the game bar no matter what you're running. And there'll be a Beam stream button that'll enable you to start streaming immediately from Windows 10 or the Xbox. That's neat. But I think what's probably cooler, potentially, it could also be way, way worse, is that they're yet again, Richard, changing what happens when you push the Xbox button. But it's supposed to be for the better. They're trying to make things work faster. They're trying to make the things that you want to do the most frequently happen faster. So here's the first and probably biggest difference from all of this, is that now when this rolls out, when you push that Xbox guide button on your controller, instead of going to the home screen and kind of minimizing out of your game or whatever app you're in and stuff, instead of doing that, it's going to pop open that flyover menu from the left, which previously, or currently, I guess, to get that open, you would have to double tap the Xbox button to make that appear. I think their usage data must show that more people were trying to use the popover thing than trying to go back to the home screen. And I know for me personally, that's absolutely true.
I will say that as someone who uses my box exclusively for media consumption, this makes zero sense to me, because what I want is to get out of some apps that otherwise don't have an easily discernible exit path. I'm looking at you, Amazon, and some others.
Well, and that's pretty much every app. Like, none of the apps have ways to get out of them on their own, not that I can think of.
Well, I tend to believe that you should be able to back out of an app from the top of its homepage. But that just does not work in some apps. I think even Netflix doesn't work that way anymore.
That's not something I even try. If I want to get out, I just hit the Xbox button. So now, to get that experience, what you're going to need to do is press the Xbox button, and then that little popover thingy is going to come over from the left-hand side. And Richard, just so you know, I've got a screenshot of this in our notes, and we'll link to a story that has a screenshot of this. There's going to be a new icon in the middle of that that is the little Xbox logo. And that's going to be what's selected first. And it displays a whole bunch of quick things that are like recent things that you've been in so that you can quickly swap between a couple of apps that you're using a lot. But by default, it stays on the farthest left menu selection thingy. And if you press A on that, it'll take you to the home screen. So to get home, it's tap Xbox once, hit A. It's not just hit tap Xbox. It's not going to be double tap Xbox. I don't know. We'll see. I think for my usage of it, which is more gaming than media stuff, I'm kind of excited to see how this goes, because I can't tell you how many times I try to double tap that Xbox button and instead it only registers the one click, which is slow to get back to the home screen. And then I have to arrow over or go back into my game and try the double tap again. It's kind of frustrating. So I'm glad that they're trying new things. I'm really glad that it's going to be coming to the preview so they can get lots of feedback from a huge number of people, because Microsoft does change things that they're doing based on user feedback, especially on the Xbox side. So we'll get a chance to try this out for ourselves, and hopefully we'll like it. And if not, hopefully they'll change it.
I know I'm the minority Xbox user, but this just makes no sense to me. And this just reinforces the reasons that I think they need to do a clean sweep of the team responsible for the new Xbox interface.
You know, I'm not convinced that you are going to hate it so much, because if you're primarily switching between just a few apps like Netflix and Amazon and HBO Now or something like that, those are probably all going to be in that recent list, and you're going to be able to get to them really fast, probably right, we'll faster see. Than what you're doing now, because of how freaking long it takes for the dashboard to load when you press that Xbox button. Right? I mean, it is infuriatingly slow to get back to the home screen. It's multiple seconds.
We'll have to see if this makes a difference. Are you finding that it is equally slow even on the 1S?
Yes.
Wow.
At least it's not dramatically faster. I definitely don't think that. So,
All right.
So that's the big guide change that's coming. On the Windows 10 side, they're going to be enabling a feature called game mode. The idea is pretty simple. Games want to use all of your system's resources, all of them. And this is somehow going to make it so that it minimizes resource usage from other things that are going on your computer at the time. I'm really curious to see how that works. Like, if I have other apps running, it's not going to kill them, I don't think. So I wonder if it's going to be doing some like, sort of like how it does hibernation, where it takes everything that's in RAM, writes it to disk, and then turns off your computer. And then when your computer restarts, it just reads it all off of disk, loads it back in RAM, and everything's cool again. I could see them doing that, and that would probably work fairly well to free up RAM.
I doubt it is that significant, but I think this is a great idea. This is a good idea to come up with a way of not just prioritizing your CPU as you need to for games, but also your system available resources. That is really critical in these cases. So this is cool. I'm curious to find out more about this once it's available.
Yeah. And one important thing that I know a lot of our PC gamers are wondering as they hear this is, oh, I bet it's only going to work for Windows Store games, isn't it? Well, no, actually, this will also work for traditional Win32 apps, like all of those things that you bought from Steam. It'll work for those too. So yeah, I'm really curious to check this out, because if I want to play an intensive game on my machine, on this machine that I share with other people who have other accounts and stuff, it pretty much just means, all right, I'm rebooting the box. I hope the other people who are logged into this machine didn't have any unsaved work, because I'm rebooting and playing my game. So hopefully this will help lessen some of those situations for me. There's also some other stuff. We're not going to dig into any of these details. More improvements to the activity feed, more improvements to looking for group, and the ability to create your own tournaments will be coming in this update also, although it is still limited to a select few games for the time being, including Killer Instinct, which stick around for more Killer Instinct news in a little bit. So that again, that's what's coming now. I expect to get this week, and hopefully I'll be able to give you my impressions of this for next week's show. Richard, I always forget, are any of your Xboxes in the Insider Preview program thingy?
No, but I think my old one is going to need to be, because I'm going to make that a dev box.
Well, no, because if you're in dev mode, you can't be
right.
in the
you can't
Insider
be
Preview
in
thing.
The Insider. Okay, then it will remain as it has been. No, none of them. None Ooh. Either of them are in the preview program.
That stinks. All right, let's move on. There's new hardware, Richard. You need some new controllers. You need some fancy, different colored controllers for your Xbox that you don't play.
Particularly since that Xbox button works differently. I mean, it would be good to get a whole new controller.
Yeah, you're going to want to start over for sure. So do you like the color red, Richard? I don't, but maybe you do.
I love the color red. But this controller, this is not what I think of as red. This is like crimson. I love this color. I think this is an awesome color for a controller.
If you're into reds and crimsons and stuff, yeah, it's good. I personally am not into the color red.
Yeah, no, I totally love it. And then they also have one that's kind of like I'd call it army green, but what I really want to call it is hunter green, because the stalks for your two finger controllers are bright orange.
Oh, you're so not a gamer, Richard. They're not finger controllers, they're thumbsticks.
Oh, thumbsticks. Finger controllers, thumbsticks. Thumbsticks.
You know, I hadn't thought of the obvious hunter reference there with the dark green and then the safety orange.
Yeah, I'm loving that.
When I first looked at these pictures, I was like, all right, they've got a red one that's obviously red and a black one with orange accents. Like, that's how dark this dark green is. It's almost black, not quite. It is like a very dark green, like you might see in camouflage. So yeah, I think that one's pretty cool looking. I really like the orange accents. If you want either of these controllers, well, the red one is available now, but they've got some exclusivity for how you can acquire these. The red one, you can get at the Microsoft Store. Good luck finding one. Or GameStop. There's probably one of those nearby. And that is $65. So you're paying $5 extra for the fanciness. And then the green and orange one, also available at the Microsoft Store and Walmart, not until January 24th, though. That one will also be $65.
Well, that's not too bad. That's a week from the day that we're recording. So a couple days after this comes out. Now, you posited an interesting question here, kind of wondering how they came to the conclusion that these new colors needed to be out in the market.
Yeah, because last summer at E3, they announced the Xbox Design Lab, which was a website where you could use to custom design your own Xbox controller. I used it to make myself a yellow and blue one that I love. You could basically pick from a whole bunch of colors and put them in various places all around the controller. And I wonder if they're using data from the Xbox Design Lab purchases to figure out what types of color schemes they should be making available to the general public. And if so, I wonder how that goes. Like, if they see lots of really, really common color schemes, should they make those available as regular controllers for $65? Or would they think, no, we shouldn't, because a $65 controller costs less than an $80 custom controller.
No, I think you're onto something. I think that they probably took the things that are really popular, and I could see these being popular selections from that lab. I think these are cool looking controllers that might appeal to a large audience. And it means that they're more readily available. It means that they are available when you want to go get one, as opposed to having to custom order them. So I like that. I think that's a cool thing.
Although with the Xbox Design Lab, you can't do to the thumbsticks what they did with the green one. The thumbsticks are always one solid color. And I really like how they made the bottom side of the thumbsticks orange and the top where you put your thumb, the green.
Ah, okay. I was going to ask you if your finger controllers were blue.
Yes, my thumbsticks are blue while the front of the controller is yellow. All right, so one more gaming slash Xboxy story here, and that is an update on January's Games with Gold, because it is now the second half of January. Your available options have changed a little bit.
Of course they have.
So on Xbox One, you can still get World of Van Helsing Death Trap, because that's for the whole month, but we also start the second half of the month, which means another new title for the Xbox One, and that is Killer Instinct Season 2. The whole thing. And that means, like, I know what you're saying, Josh, Killer Instinct, that's a free game. How is this extra stuff for free? Well, the way Killer Instinct works is the base game and the ability to play it is free, but you only get like one or two characters. That's it. If you want extra people to play as, you have to buy them one by one or as an entire season. So season two includes all of the characters from that season. I think this also gives you a whole bunch of outfits and stuff. And this particular season included like the arcade version of the original Killer Instinct 2, which would have been from like 1998 or something like that. So all of that totally free. And the other thing that's cool about this particular Game with Gold is that this is the first time we've seen a Games with Gold game that is also Xbox Play Anywhere compatible. So even if you don't have an Xbox, if you're a PC gamer, go to the Microsoft store, the Windows store, and get this because it's free. Go and do it. There's no reason not to. It's free. All right. It is awesome. It also means that we've got a new free game on the Xbox 360 side, and that is Rayman Origins, which of course is backwards compatible. Rayman games, lots of 2D platforming fun. Definitely go and get that one. All right, Richard, We're done with gaming stuff.
Finally. All right. Hey, let's talk about some smart home stuff.
Yeah, totally. That fits the show.
All right, cool. Well, let's move into mobile, and we'll talk about the SmartThings app for Windows Phone, because it's one of the few platforms where you can get a Windows Phone app to control your smart home products. Well, except for Homeboy, because everybody knows that Homeboy works on Windows Phone, right?
Absolutely. They ought to. Homeboycontrol.com.
Nice plug. Well, the honeymoon is over, folks, because unfortunately, SmartThings is going to remove the application from the store on April 1st. And probably more importantly, they're going to stop supporting the app on July 1st. Now, what I'm curious about, and I don't know if we have an answer to this, is it likely that this will, you know, linger on and work as long as it works, but it's just never going to get updated again as new capabilities come to the platform?
I would say that's probably pretty likely. And then if they do something in the future that horribly mangles this app, that's when they'll do something to completely disable it.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is unfortunate, but you know, I think you brought this to my attention last week, and my reaction was, yeah, not surprised.
No, unfortunately, it isn't surprising. You know, I'm always looking for Windows Phone news, and I'm trying to find positive news, but there isn't a lot. And unfortunately, that trend continues with our next story. If you're a runner and you like Runtastic, don't be expecting any new updates to that app on your Windows Phone either. Their app is still in the store. They haven't announced a date when they might remove it from the store, and the app does still work, but just like with smart things and what we were presuming there, it eventually might not work, be based on some things that they might do to update other things on the server and stuff like that. And they're not going to fix it because there just aren't enough people using Windows Phone anymore to justify the ongoing maintenance of these apps. So unfortunately, we see SmartThings and Runtastic both eventually going away from the Windows Phone marketplace. All right, Richard, let's find some happier news. So that was stuff going away. How about some new features from the Windows marketplace?
All right. Let's see. How about Microsoft is getting into the ebook business?
Wait, getting into the ebook business? Weren't they already in the ebook business?
Yeah.
Back when, like, so here's the thing. Gates ran Microsoft?
Yeah, remember the Microsoft Reader program that you could run on your Windows Palm PC?
It wasn't called a Windows Palm PC. Come on, Richard.
Oh, yes, it was. No, it was when it first came out.
It was Pocket PC.
When it first came out, it was actually a palm size PC is what it was called.
Right.
And then it became the Windows Pocket PC. And then they allowed you to run a reader app on your desktop so you could read books. The problem was you had to go find them. Like, they didn't sell them to you or anything. You had to, like, go to the Gutenberg Project or find .pub books that you'd be able to open in it. And I remember actually reading quite a few books on my Pocket PC with the reader, but they eventually killed it. They just didn't have enough interest. And I think the reason was that they didn't have a source for the content. So they're taking a whole new approach, it looks like now, Josh.
Yep. It looks like with the creators update, we can expect to see Microsoft selling ebooks in the Windows Store. You can already buy apps and games and music and movies from the Windows Store. So now they'll be adding ebooks. Part of me says, great, good. This is good news. It's always better to have even more media options available all in one place where you've got one form of payment already linked up and I don't have to manage accounts at a whole bunch of different places. Cool. But what about the reading app? You got to have a good app for reading these things. And as far as we know, the only thing that Microsoft is producing for that right now is a little app called Microsoft Edge, a web browser. I don't have super high hopes of Edge being a fantastic ebook reading experience.
Well, you know what? I mean, it could be, potentially. I know, for example, that the way that PDFs work on Mac, or the way that, for example, some documents open up in Safari, if I'm remembering correctly, because I usually don't use Safari. It is possible to have a decent reading experience in the browser. I just wonder if my concern isn't in the reading experience. My concern is here we are in 2017, and thus far, Microsoft hasn't sold ebooks in their store. Now they are. It's yet another type of media that they're the last to offer and will probably be the lowest in volume in terms of purchases compared to all the other platforms that are out there. Because this isn't one where it's just Apple and Google. You also have Amazon playing here. And believe it or not, you also still have Barnes and Noble. So I'm not entirely sure that I want to buy books that might potentially be laden with Microsoft specific DRM.
Yeah, I kind of wouldn't really expect Microsoft to come up with their own DRM for this. There kind of already is an industry standard there's the format that Adobe Edition supports that I kind of view as the standard. And I think Kindle uses the same thing, don't they?
I honestly don't know. I don't know the difference between the different formats and what protection they have.
Maybe I'm wrong, because there's .mobi, which I think is Amazon's version, and maybe there is a different version for that. That's the Adobe stuff. But they at first I was thinking, well, maybe they just won't DRM it at all because Edge works as an EPUB reader, and EPUB to most people means it's not copy protected. But there's no way they're going to sell books without copy protection. Yeah. The publishers wouldn't go for that.
Right, exactly. I don't see that happening. So, I mean, I guess it's good that they're also in this space, but I feel like how is this going to be any more successful than, frankly, their video library? You know, you and I kind of look at their movies and TV library as, why would I buy it there?
Right.
So, we'll see. We'll see how this does. All right, well, that is pretty much it for the news topics that we wanted to cover. So we have a couple weeks of entertainment center stuff to catch up on, which includes each of us installing our TVs. Now, I suggested in the last episode that we are going to talk about our experiences there a little bit more. I'm not going to go into any great depth on that yet, but I do want to say that when I installed my television, one of the things that I didn't really think about is the size of the TV. You know, TVs have much smaller bezels now.
Boy, that's
than
for sure.
They did, say, I don't know, 4 years ago when I bought my plasma.
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So I have a much smaller TV that actually looks a little bit silly in the space that I had for my old TV. I don't think that I could have pushed to the 65 inch. Of course, if I had, I would have had 3D. But it's just small enough that it doesn't actually cover up the entire space intended for the television. And as a result, you can see behind it. Like, there's a gap underneath my television now. And that's partly because the TV is smaller. And it's also partly because the Visa mounting block on the back of the television is a lot lower than on my old television. Mm. So when you mount it, it ends up being higher because the screws for it on the TV are lower. I know it takes a while to think that through. And so it's not positioned exactly where I want it. So I'm going to have to mess with that a little bit more or just come to peace with it. I doubt I'm going to come to peace with it. It's Ultra HD, or it's 4K. So I said, okay, well, I have to get Ultra HD content, right? I've been buying Blu-rays that are in the new Ultra HD format, but I wanted all of the goodness that is Netflix in Ultra HD. You have to pay more for that.
Yes, you do. It's what, $2 a month more?
Nickeling and diming.
You also nickeling get extra and diming. Concurrent streams. I think you get 4 streams at a time.
Yes, right. So bundling on top of that. So you want 4K? No, you have to have more streams and 4K, and you're going to pay more for that. It should be mentioned that I'm a stockholder, so I should probably be happy about that.
Right.
So I've been watching a lot of television on the new TV, and I'm all caught up on my regular viewing. So Designated Survivor, Hawaii Five-0. I'm caught up on Hawaii Five-0. Do you believe that? Looks beautiful on the new TV. New Girl, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has restarted. I have to mention, this was awesome. The most recent episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think they spent about half of the episode talking about why you shouldn't build smart artificial intelligent robots. Because if you look at all the movies, they're going to take over.
They will kill us.
It was very amusing. It's been so long since we've talked. I should mention that the mid-season finales for Arrow and The Flash occurred, and I enjoyed those. I finished watching Mars. When we left Earth, I had mentioned that with the recent passing of, I think it was John Glenn, I don't know if I have that right, just prior to the end of the year. Oh, geez, and we just lost Gene Cernan this past week, too. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Yep. Last man to walk on the moon.
Yeah, crazy. So I was watching that. That's such a great show. And actually, Gene is in that. He's in so many good interviews in When We Left Earth. So again, I highly recommend that series if you haven't seen it from Discovery. And finally, I've been keeping up with Justified and finished season 4. Now, new stuff is starting at the beginning of the new year. Nashville has restarted, but it's now on the Country Music Channel, no longer called the Country Music Channel, now known as CMT. Homeland. If you are into Homeland, Josh, you are into Homeland.
I am into Homeland.
And if you have Showtime, you can sneak the first episode of the new season.
I don't want to do that.
It's pretty good.
I don't want to do that because I want to watch a bunch of them.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that started, at least in preview anyway. And the new season of Sleepy Hollow has started, which is interesting because they pretty much have an entire new cast. Not entire, but most of the cast is new. And Man in the High Castle season 2 has started. I started that. I'm not very far into that yet, but
in 4K.
I did. In 4K, in 4K HDR, I believe, if I remember correctly. The Night Manager was a series on AMC, and I never watched it, and I heard some good things about it over the holidays, so I decided, okay, I'll give it a try. First episode, boom, I am hooked. It was a spy thriller kind of thing, loved it. 6 episodes, it's a limited series, so this is all there is. It was basically what we would have called a mini series in the old days. Totally worth the watch. I powered through it and really enjoyed it.
What is The Night Manager on? Because this sounds really good. Is that on Amazon?
The Night Manager was originally on AMC, but I ended up watching it. I don't remember if it was Hulu, Amazon, or Netflix. It was one of those. I'm sure if you do a search in your respective services, you'll find it. But it was free. I didn't have to pay for it.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
It's available. And then we watched the entire first season, the only season available, of The Crown. That is really, really good. I've been very impressed by that series. I don't know how accurate it is. I have to assume they're trying to make it accurate, but I also have to assume that they don't necessarily know the conversations that Elizabeth and Margaret had behind closed doors. So I have, you know, some of it has to be made up, but it's very good. Also, and this is it, and then I'm finally finished. The 4K, you know, I had to watch some movies in 4K. And some of the movies that I bought in 4K were Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters. Man, that is a lot of fun. Just forget about the fact that, oh, they're doing it again. It was already good. Why did you have to redo it? It was fun. It was damn fun. You will enjoy it. Also, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. That's a mouthful. An interesting, kind of fun movie if you're into these weird Victorian era special capabilities type of things. And so that was fun. And finally, not 4K, but I had to watch it because I got tired of hearing everybody tell me I had to watch it. And certainly I heard enough when I was watching Mr. Robot. I finally saw Fight Club.
What? What do you mean finally? You'd never seen Fight Club?
Never saw it before.
Ugh.
Can I just say, Mr. Robot is so much better.
Yes, but Mr. Robot is so much better than most things. But Fight Club was really good.
Yeah, it was good. But I mean, know that I went into it basically expecting the twist, just not knowing how they were going to execute on it. And once they did, I had a harder time buying it than I do with all the Mr. Robot stuff.
Mm.
So anyway, that has been what's been going on in my entertainment center. And I'm sure in later episodes, we'll spend more time talking a bit about our new TV experiences.
Yep. Okay, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about my TV because I think I did talk about it some on the episode I did with James, but I am also greatly enjoying mine, although I'm enjoying it even more now because Vizio finally released the firmware update that allows me to actually do HDR with my Xbox One S. So that's good, although it's still not actually perfect. There are times, Richard, especially when I'm watching 4K stuff or just playing games where either the screen will just go completely black for like 2 seconds or I think that'll happen regardless. Yeah, it doesn't have to be HDR because it was happening during Overwatch. And then I think this one's only during HDR content occasionally, but I haven't watched as much HDR content since this update came out. I'll get where the whole screen will go like snow, like digital staticky snow with a green bar down the left side for like a second or two and then back to normal. So hopefully they're going to fix that soon.
Yeah, that's really weird. You know, I have had problems in the past that I could only describe as digital interference that I was only ever able to resolve by replacing my HDMI cable with a better one.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've tried or if you've already set it up with a decent HDMI cable. And I know we talk about HDMI being HDMI. It's not entirely true.
It's not entirely true. Not when it comes to HDR, because you're talking about 18 gigabits per second. You can't just use a crap HDMI cable. And I have heard, I'll take it with a grain of salt, AVS forums people, but AVS forums people saying, if you actually buy the Monoprice certified premium HDMI cables, which means that they're certified with the, remember that whole Ultra HD Alliance or whatever right. that was announced a couple years ago at CES. Vizio's not a part of that, by the way. They certify cables to be, you know, certified for 18 gigabits per second and all that stuff. Some people have said, if you buy a Monoprice certified cable, you have less issues. And I bought one before Christmas. And then I lost it. I have no freaking clue where I put that cable.
Well, that's better than what I thought you were going to tell me, which is that that's what you were using.
No, I don't think I'm using that. So I need. I guess I just need to buy another one. They were only like $6. So I need to do that. But this problem isn't entirely Vizio's fault either. You know, I've done a lot of reading about this. Part of it is when Microsoft released the Xbox One S, Vizio was surprised to see that they were that Microsoft was doing something a little bit different with 4K and HDR coming out of that box. And this gets super technical and nerdy, but apparently they're sending way, 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 way more data than they actually need to. Like basically there are times when they could be sending no data at all. And the Xbox is just blasting essentially empty data down the cable.
Oh.
And Vizio's TV's got that. And they're like, whoa, what? You know, I don't know what to do with this much data all at once. And so that's where apparently some of these problems have come from. So, I mean, it's not perfect and I wish that it was, but I'm also really, really glad that Vizio does actually work on this stuff. And they're actually pretty good at talking directly to the community on Twitter and even over at AVS forums. The Vizio COO is, or maybe it's the CTO, is very commonly posting on Twitter and at AVS forums to communicate these
that's
issues.
Great.
So that's okay. It is. It's really nice to see that happening. So hopefully that'll be resolved soon. In terms of stuff I've been watching and playing, I finished Westworld. I like it. I don't think it's nearly as good as everybody made it out to be. Like I enjoyed it and I'll sign up for a month of HBO Now in 2 years when season two is done. But I don't think it's anywhere close to like Mr. Robot or any of those other shows that I've been really into. It was just good, but it wasn't great.
Interesting. Compared to Mr. Robot. Yeah.
I know they're completely different shows and that's not super fair, but I compare it to Mr. Robot because Mr. Robot has been my favorite show that's come out in the last couple of years.
Interesting. So I'll tell you what, though.
That's why.
The difference for me was that I would hoard Mr. Robot episodes and then watch a couple in a row. But I wasn't able to do that with Westworld. Westworld was night it debuted viewing for me. Every single week, I had to see the next episode as soon as it came out.
And that's how I feel about Mr. Robot. Now that usually wasn't practical for me because my life is too insane to do that. But but that is how I felt about Mr. Robot. So anyway, finished Westworld. I'm not sure what I'm moving on to next as my next big TV show. Because I caught up on Homeland. Maybe it'll be Stranger Things. I never watched Stranger Things, so maybe it'll be that.
Yes.
It should probably be that.
Yes.
Yeah. But Jen and I sat down, watched a few more episodes of This Is Us. We're still not current. I think we're into like, I don't know, shows that aired in mid-November or something like that. But still really, really loving that show. Way more than I ever expected to like a family drama sort of show.
Yep.
But it's great.
Such a good feel-good show with great, great storytelling.
Absolutely. Then on the gaming side, I had recently, like in mid to late December, finished Mass Effect 2. I'm trying to get through all of the Mass Effects 1, 2, and 3 before Andromeda comes out in March. Even though Andromeda starts a whole new storyline, the Mass Effect games are just great, so I want to get through them. So I'm now moving on to Quantum Break. I had picked that up in December-ish, and I'm really liking this. This was a Microsoft exclusive that came out, what was it, like February, I think, of 2016. It's a really cool game, guys. Like, I don't think it got the reviews that it deserved. It's got some really cool storytelling. I really like the gameplay mechanics, the way that you're controlling time to battle people. It's really cool. And then when I'm playing with friends, it's still Overwatch and it's still Rainbow Six Siege. If you ever want to play any of those with me, you know, look me up. I'm RALYDSM. That's my gamer tag. And I always love playing with you guys. And I've got a good group of guys that I'm playing those games with already that aren't jerks. You know, we're that's hard to find on Xbox
Live. Nice.
So, I mean, it's all coworkers, so that's how you find the not jerks, right? You don't go looking for random people on Xbox Live. That's not going to work out. So, that's what I've been up to in my entertainment center.
Very cool. All right. Well, we will have to touch base on how things are going with our respective 4K experiences. I know I'm hoping to get my set actually calibrated in the next couple of weeks. And so I will report back after that happens, because I've been one of those people that's been, let's say, skeptical about that. Hmm. But I know people who do it swear by it.
Yep.
All right. One quick announcement before we're out of here. Look, y'all know that I love me some Microsoft Entertainment, right?
Yep.
But I think I've been pretty honest with you that I also love me some Apple.
Your heart belongs to Apple.
And I'm very excited to announce that I'm now going to be one of the rotation of co-hosts on iChart Radio, which is a weekly news analysis show that was started by Ken Ray and is now being carried forward by his co-host, Michael Plant. And Mike is going to have various people on each week, and I will be one of those people that he has on periodically as his co-host. So I'm like kind of flabbergasted that I'm taking Ken's seat to some extent, and also really excited that I get an official channel to geek out on Apple stuff.
This is really cool. They're getting themselves a pretty awesome co-host.
And this last weekend was the first episode that I'm on. And if you haven't already checked it out, give it a listen. It is iChart Radio, not spelled like you might think. It's spelled like the iChart thing that you would look at. EYE Chart Radio. It is on iTunes and in the other places where you might expect to find podcasts.
All right. Well, very cool. And congratulations on getting that that honor of being able to co-host on a really popular podcast. I'm not kidding. They are getting themselves a really awesome co-host. You got selected for a reason. You're good at this stuff.
Cool. Thank you.
All right. Well, if people would like to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways they can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is at Digimedia Zone. We're on Facebook over at facebook.com/thedmz. We're on Google Plus. We've got an email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. If you don't care about contacting us, but you just want to hear more of us, well, Richard does another show. It's called Home On. It covers home automation stuff. What's going on with Home On, Richard?
Yeah, and the next thing up, you're going to be able to hear both of us again.
What?
Because it's going to be you and me talking about CES. And I'm late on getting this out because you know what, Josh? I'm a little bit CES'd out. So I needed a break, but we should expect to see this in a couple of days.
Cool. All right. Well, all of our podcasts are available on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Pretty much every place that you can get a podcast, you can find Entertainment 2.0 and Home On. Go to those places, subscribe to the shows. And then if you really like us, the best way that you can show your appreciation is to head on over to iTunes, leave us a rating, or if you really like us, leave us a review. It does a lot to help us out, guys, and we really appreciate it when you take a few minutes out of your time to go and do that for us. And then if you just you want to yak at us while we're recording the show, you can do that too. Show up Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, typically, is when we record the show. We do it all live. There's a chat room. You can talk to us. We can talk to you. It's a lot of fun. We enjoy having you guys there. But it's not always that night, so follow us on Twitter, and you will know for sure when we're recording live. Next week, it's not going to be Tuesday night. This is a surprise to Richard. I'm not available Tuesday night. We're going to have to figure out next week. So like I said, follow Twitter. That's how you'll know when we're going live. But that's going to do it for episode 394. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 395. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.